Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
First thing is, get a grip. We have changed the way the room is set up.
Yeah.
That is a good thing. If there's anything we've learned, we have to start accepting change. I do want to say something about the election before we proceed. To those people for whom this was good news, I ask that everybody understand the pain and the fear of those of us who did not want this outcome. For those of us that did not want this outcome, I think we need to have trust and faith in our country and have trust and faith in our Constitution. And for those refugees in the room, I would like you to know personally, and I think for many people, that we have your back. So let's proceed. We did not really actually think about the outcome when we scheduled this topic for today. I'm Heidi Holtz. I'm a director of research and projects with the Gifford Foundation. It's my honor to introduce our primary speakers, who will then in turn turn the floor over to introduce to some of our refugees at the and former refugees at the table. Or at the chairs. Our first speaker presenter is going to be Olive Sifuma, who's currently the director of the Center for New Americans at Interfaith Works, where she's been since last February. Previously, many of you know her because she was director of community grant making at the Central New York Community Foundation and also has worked at Syracuse University. Mark Cass will be moderating. He is the director and organizer of the Alliance of Communities Transforming Syracuse. Prior to this, he had worked in the field of adult literacy for over 20 years and currently serves on the board of the Northside Learning Center. In this role, he's also active in the Refugee Alliance. He lives on the south side of Syracuse. And Nicole? Nicole is, I will tell you, I'll start to talk to you about it, is founder and executive director of Hope Print. It's a local not-for-profit focused on empowering resettled refugees to thrive post-resettlement. Nicole lives on the north side, the neighborhood which is home to the majority of newly resettled families. She also serves as chair of the Refugee Alliance of Syracuse. Before we begin, I just want to remind everyone a little bit, for those of you who probably don't know, two and a half years ago, I stood up here with Kristen Musatelli-Heath, and we presented the findings of the World at Our Doorstep study on welcoming refugees into our community. Many people in this room were also a part of that study. One of the primary recommendations was that someone in town take on the task of continuing the beginning convenings of the refugee stakeholders. This went anywhere from government to resettlement agencies to refugees themselves. And the Gifford Foundation stepped up and said they would do that. We facilitated that for several years. And in 2015, we stepped back and said, do what you want. And they stepped up. And Nicole has been acting as the coordinator of that activity on a purely volunteer basis, I will tell you that. So I will turn this now over to Olive, who will give us some background on refugees.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
So my charge this morning is to provide for you a sense of who is coming to Syracuse. So I'm going to be just giving a breakdown of arrivals as we've seen them in the last year. But before I do that, though, I wanted to just start my remarks with telling you a little bit about this conference that I attended in Houston, where the deputy director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement made some remarks, and he started off his remarks by quoting from the address that the Pope gave to the Congress last year. And he basically used the address to remind us of why we do the work that we do. And I find that it was words that I needed to hear in terms of what motivates us on the front line and as staff who are working on refugee resettlement. But it also was words that make me proud to know that we do refugee resettlement in Syracuse. And what he said was, he started off just by talking about how we're facing a refugee crisis of a magnitude not seen since the Second World War. and the challenges that it presents across the world. He encouraged us not to be taken aback by numbers, but to rather view refugees as persons, seeing their faces and listening to their stories, and then responding in the best way that we can to the situation, responding in a way that's always humane, just, and fraternal. He reminded us of the golden rule, and he said, and I quote, "This rule point, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto you." This rule points us in a clear direction. Let us treat others with the same passion and compassion with which we want to be treated. Let us seek for others the same possibilities which we seek for ourselves. Let us help others grow as we would like to be helped ourselves. In a word, if we want security, let us give security. If we want life, let us give life. If we want opportunities, let us provide opportunities. The yardstick we use for others will be the yardstick which time will use for us. And so I stand here proud of the work of the Refugee Alliance, proud of all of the volunteers and community members that work with us to resettle refugees in Syracuse, and proud of my community that we do this. And in terms of who we're helping and who is coming to Syracuse, I'll speak specifically to 2016. The refugee numbers overall, the U.S. government, the president had an approved ceiling last year of 85,000 refugees that would be accepted into the country. Ultimately, 84,995, five short refugees were admitted, including 10,000 Syrians. New York is the largest resettlement state in the country it's the third largest, after California and Texas. And then we in Syracuse welcome about 1,200 people a year on average. Thank you. Thank you. So who are the 1,200 people that we have seen come to Syracuse in the last year? Catholic Charities and Interfaith Works are sister programs that both do what we call reception and placement, so receiving people that first arrived to us, and then agencies like Hope Print and the ethnic community-based organizations help with the provision of services along that continuum. But we see them from the moment that they arrive at the airport. And so the numbers I'm providing are between us and Catholic Charities. So last year, Catholic Charities received 757 people, and then we received 705, which was a total of 1,462, which is, as you can see, slightly higher than we've had in the previous year, and that's largely because there were more refugees that came into the country overall. So the initial number was 70,000, and then it was raised to 85,000. And then the largest of the, in terms of the countries where people are coming from, Afghanistan, Bhutan, Burma, Burundi, Central Africa, Congo, Cuba, Ethiopia, Iraq, Ivory Coast, Pakistan, Rwanda, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Ukraine. So from all over the world. And the largest numbers that we've seen, 319 between the two of us from the Democratic Republic of Congo, 282 from Somalia, and then 202 from Syria. So those are the three largest groups that we've received. And then for us, about two-thirds of all of the people that we've seen are under the age of 18. So lots of young people who are here and stand to do great things and have a great future. And then in terms of projections for this coming year, 2017, the proposed ceiling is 110,000. And for Syracuse in particular, Interfaith Works is looking at receiving about 660, and then Catholic Charities another 650. And we've been told to anticipate that we'll see the same patterns as far as the highest numbers being continuing to be from Congo and also from Syria, all things staying the same. Thank you. And now I will hand it over to Mark for the panel.
Good morning. Really happy to have you all here on this very important topic. So our goal today really is to follow up, as Heidi said, on the study and other work, but also just to give you kind of a peek into this broad range of folks who are really enriching our community. Tell you a little bit about the Alliance as well. So Nicole, do you want to?
So I'm Nicole Watts, as was mentioned, the director of Hope Brent, and I moved into Syracuse's North Side about 6 years ago, and with this, the similar mission to what the Alliance is all about, and that is this primary goal that all of these new neighbors that we're welcoming into our community would be able to reach their full potential. You can imagine if you were put into the middle of a country where you did not know the language, had a completely different culture, and had such a huge learning curve, you would come with all that you have now, your background, your education, your family, so much richness that you have to offer, but a lot of it struggles to be integrated into the community unless if there are people who walk with you and hold your hand and introduce you to all of the different things that are needed. And so as we looked at the OCL study and the group of us that work with refugees, and we asked, what is the greatest need really here for those of us that are working in this community to foster? And we determined that the most important thing for us was to empower this integration, to empower them to thrive through integration. And how are we really doing that? Now, you notice I use the word integration, not segregation, assimilation, right? Because we want to be together. Because the reality is that our country and our world today, as Olive referred to earlier, is in a completely different space than it's been. And it's likely not going to go back. There were the highest number of refugees in recent history, and there's also the lowest number of people going back to their homeland as these conflicts go on. And so as people are coming into our community with their rich and beautiful culture, they are redefining in many ways our nation and our city. And so what does it really look like for us as a city to wrestle through what it means for us to be together now Syracuse, because we are now Syracuse together with all our cultures, with all our languages, with all of who we are. And so that is the primary goal of the Alliance, is that we would wrestle with that question, that we would empower our community to be an excellent example of that, and that we would be a place where people are loved and welcomed and empowered to thrive.
Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. So we'll start with some panelist stories, and then we'll wrap up in time for some questions. So at this point, I'd like to introduce Dainaba Farah as our first speaker. And if you could, Dainaba's going to tell a little bit about her experience from coming here a number of years ago and, where she is now. And we're also asking Dainaba to go first because she has to get to class at SU on time this morning. So Dainaba.
Good morning, everyone. So I came to America when I was 9 years old. We were we landed on Stowe Mountain, Georgia, and we were welcomed by a refugee settlement kind of homes, like Jubilee Homes, where people that we knew from back our country that were lived in a camp with us were already there. So I remember we got off the bus afterwards, and there's like homes that Somali refugees mainly live in. Education for parents, there's babysitting, to get them connected back to their families back home. and all the services. So you stay there for about like 6 months to get you resettled into the American community, and after that you move into the city. So you already have some kind of feeling about what the language is like and all that stuff. They loved us so much that we stayed there for a year. So and after we moved into the city, there was this, so I don't think there was any like organizations such as Interfaith or Catholic Charities, because the only people that helped us was a church organization. When we moved in, my mom was pregnant with my youngest sister, but she had an issue and she had to get surgery. My mom, you had to ride subways and trains. She didn't know how to do that. She had a younger brother who's now 12, subhanAllah, 12 years old now, but he was like a baby. And so she had to do all of this by herself, and she had no idea. We would always get lost on the subway. And then when she got her surgery, she was very afraid because everybody was like, usually in back at home, if you get surgery, you're going to die. It's like you're basically putting your life in line when you get surgery. So everybody told her, you know what, I don't think, I wouldn't do it. But she did it anyways, and the baby died 3 days later because of the issue that she had. And we started getting bills, health insurance bills. And we're like, what is this? And we didn't know what to do, because we're like, where do we go to help? Who's going to translate for us? And like, I see like my parents are scrambling. My dad doesn't even have a job yet, and he's getting all these bills. And then we called my auntie, who's here in Syracuse. She arrived April of 2004, and we arrived July of 2004. And then we called her. She's like, oh, there's this organization such as Catholic Charities. They help you. They helped us move into this apartment. And we have all these services. We have food stamp. We're like, what is that? We have Medicaid and all this stuff. So we're like, yeah, well, let's go there. So 2 days later, my mom literally just like, I was in school. This is very traumatic. I was in school, and mom was like, okay, come. They called me down to the office. And then I came to the office, and mom was like, okay, we're moving to Syracuse. I'm just getting settled here. Like, I just made some friends. I just had relationships with my teachers, but like we just left like that. And then we drove 13 hours from Georgia to up here. And when we came up here, we got so much help from Catholic Charities. I started going to the CYO program for the youth. And then after a few, we lived in Oak Street, those apartments, and there was a lot of families who lived there. Well, there's a lot of people who lived there that we knew. And when we came here, we got so much assistance from the community in itself. And being in school was totally different, because I was almost done my fifth grade year, but because we end school later here, I had to kind of repeat 2 months of it, which is fine. But my auntie went to the same grade as I was, and I got bullied a lot. I didn't know how to handle it. I would just, my mom, if I told my mom that I was getting bullied, she just thought I was lying. She didn't know bullying existed in schools. So I'll just, you know, cry myself to sleep about how I don't want to go back to school, but my mom would make me go to school because she didn't understand bullying and all this stuff. We would have our hijab taken off. During gym, we would have to wear skirts because as Muslim women, we can't wear pants, especially tight pants. So we'd been made fun of everything that we are. And as I went through my middle school year, when I came to high school, I began to start to look at myself and look at myself in a way as a person who is not, like, despite all the bullying, despite all of the things that I went through, I was still wearing my hijab. I was still wearing my skirt. I was still wearing what I needed to wear. I wasn't changing into what people wanted me to be. And I just looked at myself like I was stronger than I thought I was. And I started loving myself the way I am. And I actually continued to wear hijab and be like, I don't care if you don't like me. And I coped through my poetry. So I started writing poetry when I entered high school, and I coped through my poetry. Every issue that I had, I would write it down. So I was talking to somebody, whoever it was. And I'm going to publish soon, so please support me. after that, I went to H.W. Smith. I was there for middle school and high school. I went to Nottingham High School. And in Nottingham High School, it was very, as you all may know, it's very rich school with different cultures, different ethnicities and such. But we always had issues with the African-American students, you know, being called African booty scratch. Oh, y'all stink like booty. I'm sorry, but that's what they said. And we have a different smell. It's called bakhur, and it's like incense. And they've never smelled that. So so they would make fun of us. And we'd just be like, what is going on? Am I really, you know? And we'd become self-conscious. But as I went through my poetry, I coped. I helped my other siblings cope through the experiences that they were facing. And I played basketball, which was very hard to convince my parents. And I played volleyball very hard again to convince my parents. But I always attempted to convince them, and I did. And I played volleyball for 6 years and basketball for 4 years. And through that experience, I became who I am. You know, we go through our life. Everything that happens in our life happens for a reason, to prepare us for a greater good, to prepare us for another portion of our life. And I think through getting bullied, through starting to write poetry, through being a gap for the younger siblings that were coming up to high school, I think that prepared me for who I am today. And although my parents struggled, and they struggled to keep the family together through finances issues, through educational issues, we still made it through, and we're here for 12 years? 12 years. More than 10. Yeah, 12 years. And alhamdulillah, and we couldn't do it without the community, because we had, I forgot his name, but the Somali interpreter who would go to the schools and interpret for us. My mom would use me as an interpreter, but sometimes you can't trust your kids, because if teacher's saying, oh, you're getting low grade, be like, Mom, I'm doing fine. I'm doing so well, you don't even know. So having that interpreter to help my mom trust what the person was saying, what the teacher was saying. But through this experience, it made me who I am today. Right now, I went to Onondaga for 2 years for my human services degree. I served as a student trustee on the board of trustees for a year there, and I transferred to SU, and I'm finishing up my bachelor's degree in social work, and I want to focus on a part of community advocacy and also school social work. And I want to focus on school social work because I know that if my parents knew about the school system and the way that it worked, opportunities that were presented, they would more likely, you know, seek out those opportunities. But they didn't have somebody who looked like them, someone who spoke their language to help them, give them these opportunities. Like, oh, these are things that your child can be involved in. And I just want to create that gap. I want to fill that gap for the refugee families to the schools, to share them with opportunities that their students have, after school programs, whatever it may be. My parents never heard of after school programs until they came here. So we told them we wanted to do after school program. They were like, no, we don't know what that is. It does not exist. You're coming right home after school. And back in Kenya, they didn't exist. You come from school, and that was it. So creating, filling that gap for the refugee families, Somali, or whatever it may be, to help them with opportunities for and the children's education. Because I wish I can go back and take advantage of the opportunities that I see now. Like, oh, I could have done that. I could have done that. And I think that's very, very important. And I want to go into this field with that ambition and determination. So thank you for listening to my story. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dainaba. I think it's obvious the great leadership, that I've come to know in working with Dainaba, and is a great. It's a hopefulness that I think we hear. I know you've got to get to class at 9, so we'll just change the protocol a little bit. If anybody had a question for Dainaba, we'll do that and then let her head to campus. Anybody have a question?
Where can we pick up your book?
I'm working on it right now, but as soon as it's out, I will send a message out to Mark and all these organizations, and hopefully it can begin. The other thing I do is I run a Saturday tutoring program at Dr. King Elementary, and it's every Saturday, 9:30 to 11:30. SU tutors come and they tutor these students. So if you know anybody who would benefit from this, please send them my way. Can you offer them my email?
Yes, and I'm sure Eileen can
Okay.
get that out through the email list.
Okay. So I think I knew deep down what was, I don't want to say what was right, but I knew that what I wanted to do. I knew what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get it. And I was always persistent, especially when it came to after school programs, especially when it came to playing sports and being involved. I always knew what I wanted, and I fought for it. And I think some kids, they fall into this, oh, my mom doesn't want me to do it, so I'm not going to do it, so I'm going to stay home. But being, I always tell my parents, like, being involved in the school environment helped me as a student. I was around students all the time. We would do homeworks together. It made me a better student, being involved in the student community. And I think that just going through and being persistent and consistent with them and continuously asking them and convincing them that this is what I needed to do. And I think that helped me. On the other hand, my siblings, so I have three sisters and two brothers who are younger than me, and they're trying to convince my parents to do the same thing that I'm doing because they're still not used to it. But they're kind of settling, okay, the mom won't let me do it. So I'm like, no, you have to keep asking, you have to keep asking, and you have to convince them. And my parents are they're not really strict, right? They allow me to express myself, and they allow me to say, you know what, maybe we don't know the system, maybe she knows more because she's growing up in it. And I think because my parents gave me that leeway and also that they weren't super strict and I was persistent with them, I think that's what helped me. But I see a lot of students who fall into that and they're home and they're not getting good grades. When they come home, they're watching television and that's about it. And I try to help those kids, you know, with the after school program, with the Saturday program, to get them out of the homes and reading and writing and getting tutoring so that they can at least get that aspect of their education.
Okay, round of applause for Dana Haba. Thank you so much. So as you heard a little bit from Olive, you know, if we were trying to represent the whole refugee community here, we'd need 23, 25, 30 chairs. So we had to keep this panel a little bit small. But at this point, I'd like to introduce Nar and have Nar tell us a little bit about her experience and about herself.
Okay, nice to meet you, everybody. Good morning. So my name is Nar. I'm from Nepal. Maybe 5 years and 4 months been in Syracuse. I have two kids. My son is 5 years old. He is born here. He's go to kindergarten in Franklin School. Then I have 2 years old girl. She is so busy. I know Oprend. Oprend help every time to care my kids. And so I too help to Oprend to some problems with refugee. And I know how to help to now this time to in refugee. Before I have a lot of problems in my home and every Nepali family and every refugee too. How to growing in United States? We know only my language in Nepali, but we don't know in United States language. Here is many language people, many. But we cannot understand everybody. But I know 4 languages, in Hindi, Nepali, English, and little bit Spanish. Somebody helped to teach me this time. We growing with a language in United States, first of all. Then how to introduction for our, like that kind of problems in United States, and how to go shopping, then how to buy, like that kind of problems. We are hungry. We don't know everywhere, and everything, every food in United States. We come that times in 2011. Then some help with Jai Suvedi. He is my caseworker. Just few days, he have a lot of Nepali refugee they accept. Not all year, all time for Jai Suvedi. They have a lot of problems. A lot of refugee, same like me, they accept. Then few days they help me, but one day we go, but it's a different way. We know today we go Lodi, but the different way, many road in Syracuse, or everywhere, but we don't know. That times, we saw the traffic light or some address, and we go that time, kind of buy for that. Sometimes we cannot find the market. Oh, we coming to home to sit. Sometimes we forget the house too. I don't know, some few days for my address. Now I'm living in Lilac, We moved to Lilac, but I don't know my address. Sometimes I forget. I tell I'm Lodi. I live before Lodi, like that. Then now this time we are growing. I know everywhere. I have no car. I'm walking, two kids. I know everywhere in Syracuse. Where is downtown? Which road is downtown? I know that. Now it's a lot of problem in my home too. Then we are culture, we know. We are the culture in Hindu. That is too hard for a Hindu culture. I know Christmas too, Christian too. Oh, everybody have a culture. But Hindu is too much hard. You know, somebody eat every kind of meat like that, and a Hindu cannot eat meat. Like that kind of problems, and somebody's coming to home, and I don't know how to talking that times. You are the English language, and like that. And I know only the yes and no. But I know now this time how to do that. A lot of problems, and I do the his sometimes, sometimes no. Sometimes call the phone, and like this kind of benefit, something. I don't know. Who call me? Sometimes give me this much of money. You use before, like that. Oh, I don't know that kind of money. I know I cannot see, I have no job, nothing. How to give the money? It's too much trouble in United States. Now I know now this time somebody's calling me, then this much money, can you give me? Oh, I call you police. Why you need to money? Like that, they call the phone.
Thank you, Nar.
Yeah.
Yes. We should have time for questions later, but it's often said, you know, we are a nation of immigrants, and the north side of Syracuse certainly has always been a neighborhood of immigrants. And you know, one of the things that's been emerging all along is, you know, the next step. As people start to learn, you know, the ways of a new city, of a new culture, of a new nation, they begin to organize. And so our next speaker, who probably doesn't need any introduction to this group, is going to share a little bit about some really exciting and interesting organizing going on within particular communities and also among particular communities. So Jai Subedi.
Thank you, Mark. I was here in October, so everybody knows me, and I'm on the OCL board member, and I'm also on the TMR committee, and so many. And 2 days ago, I met a lady. I was looking here. She's not here today, but she asked me, I see you everywhere, but can we introduce? And we introduce each other. And two years back, we had some fun game at Interfaith, and I got our joy is everywhere. So that's my introduction. Thank you, Mark.
All right.
And this lady has become a very good voice for a lot of immigrants, women who are discriminated within the family because it's must culture. They come with a male dominated society. Is not something that do with the culture and religion, but is a part of the superstitious things that has come from long way history from our further generations, that has men is the superior in the family and women are not treated equally, but here everybody is equal. So she became a very good voice for every one of us, and thank you, Nar, for your good work. And thank you, Nicole, what you have done on the north side. Always good. As Mark said, I don't want to go back to my all long story, but I was a former refugee, came to Nepal at the age of 12, stayed in the refugee camp for 18 years, and came to U.S. in 2008, November. So this Sunday would be my 8th anniversary in U.S., And snow is not here yet, but 2008, I had a snow the day after when I arrived. So just to reminding, I'm thinking when the snow will get start in Syracuse. Since then, since I come to Syracuse, I feel is my community and is part of where I belong to. And I started working myself, thinking about doing some work, and I got started working at Subway. I told many, many times, and we have a media group I made just here. The story has been recorded many times. My life started with same English as Nar was mentioning, and working hard. So now I am up to, I'm a housing coordinator at Interfaith Works. I do all the housing coordinating parts. I have a two business running over, and I own the home. And I'm a quite civically engaged man in the community. I'm in the part of Northside, very, very active committee. And I'm going to the meeting with the DOT today, another meeting attending. So I'm quite busy man. But on top of that, I do my job very honestly. So thank you all for trusting me what I have done. I served as a BCS president of the Bhutanese community in Syracuse for last couple of years. I served also president at the Butternut Community Police Center for last 2 years. Own two business, that's my achievement. That was my dream from refugee camp, that I want to be a business entrepreneur. I served in the OCL board for last three, I think it's been my 4 years running. And I am serving also as a board of director at the RISE, Refugee Immigrant Self-Empowerment, that used to be a Somali Bantu formerly. And I'm a soccer coach, so that's the fun part. So I love playing soccer and watch always the soccer game. So that's my, and how I got involved with this alliance, when we had a study done with a refugee in our doorstep, I feel how I knocked the other's door, how I am treated as immigrants in our community. So I deeply went through all those studies. I was in the study committee. I was in the panel. And I found it's quite interesting, the history of how Syracuse, the county, and the state is so welcoming to the new immigrants, as Mark said. So, and since then, the Refugee Alliance formed, and I have been to the Refugee Alliance all over so until now. And lately, we feel as we gotta do something from our own side to go and be a part of the voice. That what we do in our community, in our county, in our city, in our state, about from our new immigrants group and from our new refugees, so that we can allow the new immigrants and the new refugees to be a part of the voice and be a part of the good contributing factor for this economic and so many things. Because we have a history that the Syracuse and the county itself is so welcoming, and German and Italian, how you came from other countries and be a success in this country. So we feel the same way. And I want to be a part of that story. I want to be a part of that history. And I want to be a part of what is going on and what needs to be done to have a change in our society. So we gather, some of us, the Haji from Somali Bantu, actually is the executive director at the RISE now. Chol Mazuk from City Hall is scheduler for Stephanie Miner. Myself, Siprin from Congoli community, and Habiba from Eritrean community. So we started talking about what would be the best for us to go, because we felt there are so many kids who are dropping off from the high school. Even who had a high school graduate, they couldn't go to the college. We have so many families, they're moving out of states because they're thinking that we are not belong to the society. There are many families who are seeking jobs, need help, but there's not many ways to help out. So we started, and we self said, we are think tank, let's start moving. Let's go something doing it. And we be a part of that HOPE initiative. That we attended the conference. So this is our starting point. And lately what we did before the election, we invited both of our candidates from our congressional district and talk about the jobs that we need. Talk about the manufacturing entry-level jobs that is not here around now, not many jobs, because I have a friend and a lot of community folks, they travel all the way to the Cortland, like 35 minutes, they get $9 per hour, and they have to pay like $50 every month for the transportation. They save it's nothing, and they couldn't sustain. It's so hard for them. So we want to be a part of all those good factors. And we started lobbying around us, and we are working hard. So now our next step is to gather at least 30 think tanks from each community, and then started working how we can move forward and be a part of this big society. So that is our work, and start working it and try to do good things in this community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. As you're probably aware, we just had an election, and a fellow named Trump is going to be our next president. And he seems to express a lot of concerns about immigrants coming in, et cetera. And I don't see any terrorists, and that's his concern, I guess, among the group we've got here today. And I don't sense that the vast majority of that's an issue. My question goes to the process that each person has to go to. In the presidential election, they talked that there was no process for sorting through folks, if you will, to keep out the terrorists. But I sense there is some kind of process that everybody goes through, and I sense you stayed in a refugee camp, you said, for 18 years, other people different amounts of times, et cetera. What is the process that you all had to go through to come to the United States?
Thank you. Very good question. So once the third country options opens in the camp, as where I came from, Nepal refugee camp, there were seven countries open applications, and I chose to become to the United States. And then I was interviewed more than 15 times in UN Asia. And every single questions, And after that, it will go to the IOM, the International Organization for Migration, which does transport, I mean, bring the people to the U.S., arrange all those. But before arranging all those, we have to pass several layers of screening. Those talk, whatever you are hearing on the news, that's not true. We are vetted very thoroughly. And I am ready and always ready to talk any of us, any of who comes to me and talk about how the refugees are bringing. They are not vetted. That's not true. We'll have several layers of screening process, including Department of Homeland Security, couple times, medical screening, thorough screening process about the questionnaires. And then only the U.S. government will accept or not after the interview, and then only will be qualified if I pass the test. So that's so many layers of screening process. So those are the waiting. There's nothing that we can just take out the blood and identify who is terrorist or not. So is a lot of questionnaires. Many, many times we have to go for interview, talk what is any affiliated to the terrorist group, any affiliated to the past history of serving to the any other military or anything. So only passing those tests, several years of tests, and then only U.S. government or the Department of Homeland Security will say you are qualified for the resettlement. And then the medical screening process starts. If the medical screening process didn't qualify, you cannot come to U.S. So is all what you are hearing on the election time? That's not true. That I can say. And I can say tomorrow, I can say in future.
I'd also point you to your table. There's a part of the OCL study that we did a couple years ago, because this has always been a huge question and just keeps getting bigger in recent months. It is outlined in that handout that is on your table. So if you want a more specific lineup of it, you can reference that.
It's been my impression from several sources that often a refugee will come with significant skills and training from the country they came from, and yet they almost have to start from scratch here. Is that a true impression, and is there any way we can fast-track people to use their skills to all of our advantage?
Yes, so our refugees are coming from all around the world. You listen to that list that Olive laid out, and even within our own country, we have people with all different skills, right? So there are a large number of people that are coming into our country who were doctors in their nation. They were civil engineers. And because of language, a lot of times the biggest issue is with certification. And so when it's issues of language, you can fast track that as fast as someone can understand the language enough and or, you know, kind of create ways for them to participate. With certification really becomes the largest barrier, and it's a thing that we are talking a lot about as a community. It's actually our selected objective as a refugee alliance that we are meeting again next week to continue working on talking about jobs and work and how do we address this very significant question of how do people, again, reach their full potential, which includes being able to utilize the skills and knowledge that they bring to our country.
My experience, I had a bachelor degree on maths and economics. So I was a teacher back in Nepal. I used to teach to the high school students. But when I come, I started working from Subway, cleaning the floors and cleaning the toilets. But my experience working with my clients, I can say, we have a doctor now. I have a client who is a high school teacher in Syracuse City School District. I have a client who is a bank manager who used to work at the James Street Chase Bank branch, personal banker. Now he moved to the headquarters in Columbus. And from Nepal. So, and we have tremendous numbers that moving to the health professionals now. Even my wife is nurse now. She's working at the Van Dyne Hospital. So we have seen a lot of progress and success coming up. But from those countries where English was not a major subject, we see problem to them. We have a doctors and engineer, but they do not have a good English here. So they couldn't able to get credential that they can get equivalent in this country. And they have to scratch all the way from the bottom and go to the ESL class and go to the GED process, even sometimes, and they start from zero. So I know that's true for everybody. It's from long time, but is there's down the road, the success is always there.
Well, first of all, congratulations on all your progress since the 2012 study. I think many people here were part of it. It's great that you've put together the alliance. And I was just curious, this one pager is great. It doesn't have a date, though. I was curious, have you already started and accomplished any of these annual community needs and assessment analyses? Because there's so much work involved, but we still have, you know, a lack of understanding of what's going on. On that note, I just thought I'd mention, I happened to set in for a couple hours on Saturday. There was an excellent conference at OCC, and a woman here, Susan from SUNY Oswego, I invited her to come, about how refugees, and I think you were there earlier, Jai, to try to address this issue of trying to help high school students segue into academia, because it is a very difficult process for everyone involved, and there's many challenges. But a couple of quick questions. I was curious, what kinds of accomplishments can you guys point out that the community-based organizations that are ethnically based in the communities, like Jai is the former president of the Bhutanese community of Syracuse, which is actually part of a larger network. And we have Hari Adhikari, the first Nepali refugee in Syracuse. He is actually the president of the Bhutanese Community of America. So we have him living here in Syracuse. So that's, you know, we really have a lot of strength here locally that people don't necessarily know. So I'm curious if you could outline what are some examples of accomplishments of the community-based organizations. And then secondly, one thing that I think the community has enjoyed in the past that didn't happen this past year is in June, there used to be a parade for Refugee Day in Syracuse and an event at Schiller Park. And, you know, it was so disappointing that this year it didn't happen. And I know I'm not the only one in this room was disappointed that what happened in Syracuse with that day. So I know you've got a lot of work on your plate, but if could you tell us what you're planning for June and maybe people can help or something?
So really quick, I want to refer to what Lisa is talking about, the sheet that's on your table, that's the one pager. And this is an outline that we actually just created in the last couple of months. And so it's seeking to be an outline of how we want to operate. On there are committees that are listed that are happening. And there has been significant progress made in several of them. Such as the Community Integration Coalition, we're really excited about a lot more networking than we've ever seen before to try to put all the parts and pieces together. The needs analysis that you mentioned, Lisa, that's on there, that's really, as we've been talking about it currently, we've decided to instead advocate that we ensure that refugees are represented on the community analyses that are already going on because there are so many of them. And we want to make sure that our population is being properly reflected and that we're paying attention to those things. So there's a number of things on here that I'm not going to go into because we are just about out of time. But if you are interested in how the Alliance comes together, I encourage you to check out this sheet a little bit more. And then I'll make sure that my information gets out as the chairman. There, as I mentioned, there are these committees, and some of your workplaces and your background might be a great person to come and to sit at the table with us.
Thank you. Just to answer a second question, that the World Refugee Day event, unfortunately, we couldn't able to arrange for last year. That's where we had some setbacks for that one. But definitely, Olive was so motivated since he started at Interfaith Works as a director. So how we can move forward for this year? And I had a conversation in my refugee ECBOs group, and we owe that one as a former refugee, as immigrants, and as a new American, we are the part of that history, and we want to continue that tradition, and be a part of that tradition always. So we already had a conversation, but I think the committee will be formed soon. And definitely we'll have this year, but I don't know how big a scale, small scale, where it will be, we'll come up with something. Just quick answer with what are the accomplishments that we got from ECBOs. We have seen some progress. I know it's very hard for each ECBOs to come up with different groups and be together because we come from all over the world, different culture. Nobody is trusting each other in the community. Nobody trusting, its families. So we came from very, very different culture and different part of the world. We never had. I'm the one, I can say, always integrated so fast and know you each other, everyone, very quickly. Corey, you're laughing. Thank you. So we want those families to move very forward quickly and be a part of this community, part of this culture, part of, at the same time, preserve their own culture. So it takes time, but we are getting there and working hard. I know I myself had a very, very hard work that I have to do always as in the community. I was a president. Before that, I was a vice president. Now I'm there always to advocate for the families, you know. So it's a hard work, but I think down the road we'll get there.
Thank you for speaking here today. It's been really interesting to hear about all of your stories. I'm just going to ask a really basic question. We are your community members. How can the community help these refugee communities assimilate better, both just as people and fellow community members, and also as professionals?
So I'm a fellow community member as well, right? And so one of the things that I have really learned is how to sit at the feet of our new friends and neighbors. You know, a lot of times we like to think that we are the experts, which we are the Syracuse experts, so we have a lot to offer when it comes to how do you find the grocery store and other things like that. But we also have a lot to learn. And so that's always my first challenge is whose feet have you sat at? Have you learned their, not just their story, their culture, all the things that they are bringing to our community? Because you know Syracuse, you might have an imagination for the way that that can be a gift to our community. And so that would be the first thing. But also around this room, I know there's a lot of different professions and backgrounds that are represented here. And the reality is that as these community members integrate into our community, they're touching probably a lot of you. I'm very hard-pressed to find someone in our community these days that spends any time, especially in the city, that isn't being touched in some way. And so I would encourage you to just take a moment to ask the question, how is our doctor's office? How is our university? How is X, Y, and Z taking into account these new community members to try to make it the most possible way for them to integrate and really thrive in the midst of our community? And I imagine that if you sit at the feet and you learn and then you ask those questions, that the true answers, the best answer for you and your personal participation in this will rise to the surface.
And thank you to our panel for this very interesting discussion today. We'd love to put more information on the Thursday Morning Roundtable website, so if you want to send us something, we'll put it up there for you. Thank you.